Thanks for listening to the Shift Your Spirits podcast. I'm your host, Slade Robertson. For 12 years, I've been a professional intuitive and the author of the blog Shift Your Spirits, where I try to write about spirituality with fewer hearts and flowers than most New Age blather. I also mentor emerging intuitives, psychics, and healers in a program called Automatic Intuition. It is Sunday, February 18th, 2018, as I record this. This week's episode is technically my last real true message for this first year of the podcast. It's kind of the finale episode. And next week is one of those reunion shows where I will talk about what I learned about you and myself during this past year of podcasting. Yes, this is episode 47 out of 48 total for the year. That's four seasons of 12 episodes apiece. Like the Lantern Bearer, this is a bit of a shorter focus segment. Another question for you to ponder and think about this week. As always, there's an oracle segment at the end of the show. So be thinking about a question or a concern you have. Hold it in your mind, and I'll come back on after the final links and credits and leave you with that extra channeled message. Before I forget, I want to say a quick thank you to Sonia Schmidt, my newest supporter on Patreon. Darla Antoine is also back as a supporter after switching around some accounts in her glamorous international tropical life. Summon Murid edited her pledge to a higher amount, and you know that always makes me happy. And science fiction author Brandon Ellis just became a patron. You guys, Brandon named a character after me in his Ascendant Chronicles series. There is a badass astronaut in his books named Slade Robertson. If you're a science fiction reader, you might particularly dig the subject matter Brandon uses as a jump-off point for his books. There's a lot of ancient alien civilization theory, if you're into that. You know, the Anunnaki, the race who built the pyramids, Atlantis, Lemuria, all that cool stuff. Brandon researches it in great detail and uses that in his fiction. The first book in the series is called The Atlantis Project by Brandon Ellis, so check that out. And Brandon, I want you to know that I named my Sim City after you. I have an island and a beachfront development that I'm working on, and they've had really lame names for months. And so when I saw your pledge come through, I was building, and I decided on the spot to call them Ellis Island and Brandon Beach. I'll try to work you into a book in the future too, but you know my process is way slower than yours, my friend. Thank you for becoming a patron. I appreciate all of you who've pledged your support, and I'm really excited to see the new names each week. It demonstrates that you're enjoying the show and you want this to continue, and that's very encouraging to me. Listeners who support the show on Patreon can access a guided meditation called Messages from Your Spirit Guides, exclusive bonus episodes, and there's also a mastery level of support where you can download one of my courses for free each month. This month, the featured course is Talking to Your Spirit Guides. Thanks to you guys, we are at the halfway mark for the yearly goal I set, and it looks very doable. To find out how you can become a patron, support my time in producing this show, and access all the extra bonus content, please go to patreon.com/shiftyourspirits. Okay, so since this is not a super long episode, and I normally do not wait until only a few days before a show goes up to record the whole thing in its entirety, but I'm doing all that because I've had the flu. I'm on day 10. I'm on the tail end of it. It is definitely not the super horrible strain of flu that's been putting people in the hospital. And the only reason I'm even talking about it, other than to explain away the congestion that you might hear in my voice, having this flu has been a major milestone breakthrough for me. I cannot take antihistamines or decongestants of any kind. Now, I know everybody hates them and complains about the way they make them feel groggy or whatever. I know a lot of you take allergy medication because you have to and you probably have somewhat of a tolerance. But I am allergic to the antihistamines and decongestants themselves, like the whole class of drugs. When they ask you at the doctor's office if there are any medications you're allergic to, I now officially list these. I am not taking them anymore. I might get a cold or a sinus thing about every other year, maybe once a year tops. And I always give in at some point at everyone's urging and take something for it, something over the counter. And sometimes I'm desperate to sleep and my coughing is keeping other people awake too, and they may want me to take something. So I do. One dose of anything like that, any antihistamine, any decongestion, any cold, flu, sinus, non-drowsy, nighttime, it does not matter. One sip of it, one pill, and I will not sleep for 3, 4, 5, 6 days after that. The lack of sleep, of course, destroys my immune system and my sanity. I get sicker as a result of it. I often hallucinate during this period after a couple days. It is absolutely hell. And the worst illness I experience in the world, in my life, is the side effects of antihistamines and decongestants. This time, I decided I could not do it again, ever. I talked to my doctor in advance of getting the flu and said, okay, here's the deal. Give me a plan to execute. Give me an alternative. So I told him, you know, all the stuff that I've told you, which we've talked about many times. And I know this has nothing to do with spirituality necessarily, but bear with me because it's one of the greatest things that's happened to me lately. I have never felt this good while being sick in my life. Now, my doctor's explanation to me about why you want mucus and lots of fluids and all that kind of stuff and how everybody gets all this stuff wrong. Like he was saying, the mucus is the way that your body sheds the illness. And so when you take things to dry up mucus when you're sick, especially with a virus, your body has no way of getting rid of it. And so it actually hangs on to it longer. So you're prolonging the length of the flu or the cold or whatever it might be by drying up your sinuses with drugs. He said, you know, your body actually needs the fluids. One of the main reasons, in addition to regulating your temperature and flushing your organs and all that stuff, is it needs more moisture to make more mucus and to make mucus that you can get rid of easily, meaning you can sneeze it out, you can blow your nose, all that stuff. It's looser, it's thinner. And so he was explaining this whole thing to me. He was like, you want the mucus. Like, mucus is your friend. Don't try to get rid of it. And as far as the lots of fluids component, he said, you know, of course you always hear this, drink lots of fluids, drink lots of fluids. He said, nobody ever comes close. Like, if you put people in a room and tested them and had them drink what they think lots of fluids are, he said, it's like 10% of what you really need to do. The goal, he said, was to like try to execute the amount of liquids he was going to tell me to do. And then when you think that you've done it, do more. Because you're never, ever really quite reaching that amount. But he said the goal, if you wanted to just like really quantify it, was to drink one cup of fluids, clear liquids, every half hour. Every 30 minutes that you're awake, you need to drink a cup of something. And that's, you know, 2 cups of fluids per hour. And yes, you have to get up and pee like 5 times in a night, which is good. And you should actually drink more when you have to get up to go to the bathroom. So, like, there were 2 major life benefits, health innovations that I have experienced this week. Like, having the flu and dealing with it in a whole new way was my job for the last 10 days, okay? I swear I'm actually excited about this. I feel really hopeful and it's been really cool. So fortunately, I had a lot of the stuff on hand because, you know, it's been so prevalent this year. I was like, I got some stuff from my sister-in-law based on the homeopathic remedies that I was advised to get. And she had gotten sick earlier. So I went ahead and bought stuff for me to have in the house as well. And then it just so happened that I was seeing my doctor for sort of yearly blood work visit, you know, 2 days before I actually got sick. So Yeah, so some herbal medicines don't do much, you know, and I will drop them if I don't see the results. But the ones that do are amazing, and I will evangelize the crap out of them. I've had plenty of experiences with certain homeopathic remedies that were much more effective than their drug counterparts. And then there are also medications that simply cannot be substituted with a homeopathic option. And, you know, I think I'm not really like all in on either direction. I believe in medicine and I believe in homeopathy, and I believe that you can shift around and choose from those baskets accordingly. I'm not one of those people who doesn't believe in vaccines or anything like that. So don't take this as any kind of extreme statement. I'm just telling you, if you hate the antihistamine and decongestant loop of, you know, do I want to feel like crap from the side effects, or am I really sick enough to warrant that? You know, that whole thing that you get into. This is what I did, and I want to share it with you because it's kind of life-changing for me. By the way, sidebar, if you have inflammation or arthritis, turmeric has changed my life. I highly recommend it. It takes a few months to build up in your system, and the body can only absorb small quantities at a time. So you can't just gorge yourself on it and think that you're going to get more benefit. It really has to build up. They told me it would take 2 months. I started to really see results about a month in, by 6 weeks for sure. So either cook with it every day. Turmeric is very easy to blend in with scrambled eggs and black pepper. Black pepper is also activates the turmeric, so they go really well together, and they're very easy to put into scrambled eggs. So if that's something that you eat every day for breakfast anyway, that would be a good way to consume it in nutritional form. I take just the spice in a 500 milligram capsule every day, and I'll tell you this: it does 95% of what really toxic anti-inflammatories such as meloxicam do with zero side effects. Zero. I'm really amazed at how good it works. I have really bad arthritis in a shoulder that I injured, and this is like saving me, and I can't even believe it. It's not even expensive. It's one of the cheaper herbal remedies that you can get your hands on. So now for the flu, the two meds that everyone told me to take, both medical professionals and who believe in homeopathy, and the women at my tea shop who are very knowledgeable about homeopathic and herbal remedies, suggested, I'm going to butcher this name, oxylococcinum and elderberry syrup. Oxylococcinum is marketed at Whole Foods under their store brand, and they call it Flu Ease. But it's basically the thing that combats the temperature and the body aches that you experience when you first start getting the flu. The elderberry syrup is known to be an antiviral. So anyway, these are two things. If you're really, really interested, you can email me, and I actually have a photograph of the actual things that I bought to take, and I can send you that picture, or I can write this down for you. So anyway, these two meds, herbal meds, oxylococcinum and elderberry syrup. In addition to that, I also did these herbal tea mixes. So I followed my doctor's fluid recommendation to the letter. Like I'm going to get an A+ from my doctor on drinking fluids. And since I just happened to get sick exactly 2 days after hearing him explain it to me and really, really drive it home, I was really motivated to do this exactly like he said it. And now the other major benefit of being sick this week was that I invented some really fantastic homemade sports drinks alternatives. Coconut water is expensive, especially if you're drinking 2 cups of liquid per hour. Are you kidding me? And plain water kind of starts to get old really quick. You know, you're already laying there and you feel bad and you're just reading, watching TV, and you know, you want something that tastes a little good in your mouth. It's hard to consume plain water at that volume. So I do consider myself something of a mixologist. I used to be a bartender and really good at recreating cocktails or inventing mixers from whatever you have on hand. And that's often my contribution at a party, is to go in the kitchen and see what I can whip up as like the drink of the day. And even though I don't drink much myself, I love making drinks for my friends. I'm not a cook, but I am a mixologist. So I mixologized the hell out of some herbal remedy drinks. I made so many of them, and I had to consume so much of it that I was really able to perfect some great recipes for iced herbal teas with juice that are super weak, the tiniest bit sweet and fruity and refreshing, and really, really cold. They were really chilled. And so they're much better cold than they are hot. Like green tea with honey and lemon, hot, 2 cups per hour. No, I ain't doing it. It's disgusting. I hate the way it makes my mouth feel. But my new herbal iced punch Radlers, which is what I'm calling it, fantastic. So that was the result of all this. And here is like kind of the takeaway of all that liquid and, you know, doing all that stuff the way I did it. The illness felt like it stayed at 30% of where it would have gotten to. And it was still there, but it was really suppressed. And there were no drug side effects at all. So I already felt like 99% better than I would have had I been taking over-the-counter antihistamines. I'll say it again. I have never felt this good being this sick in my whole lifetime. So it kind of takes away the sting of getting behind on creating the podcast. And I'm trying to do batching and reclaiming some of my schedule and all that good stuff. And I'll talk a bit more about that and the future of the podcast in my final episode next week. But this is the content finale, if you will. Here's my final deep thought for you to think. I've been hanging on to this quote for a while, for about 6 months now. It's from the movie Passengers with Jennifer Lawrence and Chris Pratt. Now, the premise of this movie is that these people are on a spaceship, you know, like 500 people on a spaceship that is bound for another galaxy to repopulate humanity outside our solar system. And it's a colony ship, right? And it's going to take, I don't know, like 100 years, 150 years, something like that, more than a lifetime for them to get to their destination. So they have all been cryogenically put into comas, you know, like frozen in these caskets that keep them alive and in stasis until they get closer to their destination. And then they're going to wake up like 3 months before they get there. And there's this fabulous spaceship for them, which is like a really nice resort. And they get to hang out and then go to this new world and populate it. So the premise of the movie is that for some reason, Chris Pratt wakes up like just a couple of decades into the journey, but like still like they've got 100 years left to go. So he wasn't supposed to wake up, and there's no way that, you know, he can get back to sleep. And so he's stuck in the middle of this voyage, living out his life potentially in space on the ship by himself. He's the only one who's awake. So anyway, I won't tell you a whole lot more about it so you can watch it. But anyway, I saw the previews and I was really excited about it. And then the movie came out and the reviews dogged it so bad. And, you know, Rotten Tomatoes just flying everywhere. And so the issue was, I think now that I've seen it, the sci-fi blockbuster audience, they want a shoot-'em-up space thriller. And this had a time clock thriller genre as an external plot. That was definitely an element in it. But this is really, at its essence, a straight-up love story. And I was pissed that I let the urge talk me out of seeing it. The sci-fi masses are the worst judge of artistic value in science fiction. They don't want depth or thoughtfulness or innovation or artistry or literary value. They want spaceships that blow up and create noises that actually would never exist in the vacuum of space. That's what they want. I thought this movie was terrific. It innovated all the obligatory scenes and conventions of a love story in a really original context and environment. Anyway, there was a quote in the movie that haunted me. No spoilers here, but I will tell you, this quote is the controlling idea for the decision that the Jennifer Lawrence character Aurora Lane has to make in the movie. Aurora's a journalist with big plans to create this amazing piece of reporting that spans centuries of time that she will essentially spend her life's work on. And it's a project that will define her posthumously. It will make her famous. And after her death, you know, she will exist as this amazing thing that she created. It's very much about the future and even the future that exists beyond her life. She's forced to make an extreme choice about the present situation that she finds herself in. She's watching these videos at one point in the movie where her friends and family back on Earth made these videos for her as a kind of going away present, because these are people that she will never see again in this lifetime, because she's chosen to undertake this journey as part of this big writing project slash legacy. And so she's given up her life and everyone she knows to do this. So she's watching videos of all these people. And I guess, you know, she wasn't supposed to see them till after the, you know, the whole voyage was over and she wakes up and she has these messages waiting for her. But anyway, so she's watching them. And one of Aurora's friends had left her a message which kind of stopped her in her tracks. And this is the quote that kind of stopped me in my tracks too. She says, "You don't have to do something amazing to be happy." With all that solar eclipse existential crisis stuff going on back in the summer and fall of 2017, and that's when I was watching this movie, all that, who am I, what is my light, who can see it shining, all that stuff, remember? I spent a lot of my time privately considering whether or not I could be happy without being aspirational in my work. Having to create something amazing, you know, could I be happy without having to do something amazing? Is that something I could possibly let go of? And I won't spoil the movie by telling you the choices that the characters make and how they arrived at their decision. But the contemplation of this question put me in mind of something that is talked about very much in the indie publishing world and the internet marketing world, which is the long tail. There are no gatekeepers anymore. The gatekeepers used to define it so that only those who did something amazing even got to show their work at all. And it used to be only the big fish, the Stephen Kings, the Danielle Steels, the J.K. Rowlings could make a living as an author. They weren't even fish, they were whales. And they made a lot of money. They were incredibly financially successful. And then you had maybe some tiny little poets and academics swimming around, minnows, teaching in schools to make their income. Their published works were more merit-based accomplishments. Those whales are still there. But what used to be the mid-list and the small list, the little bits along the tail, that's all expanding. What the longer tail means for creatives is that more and more people can make money as a side hustle, as a living, doing something they love. And almost anyone can make and share something they love to do just for the pure joy of it and reach potentially millions of other humans on the planet. In the past, if you were an amazing cake decorator, only the members of your family or your local community experienced your work on special occasions, and you probably didn't have too many peers. Now, your Instagram and Pinterest encircle the globe, and you have thousands of online peers. Even just hundreds is more than you would have ever had before our technology allowed this kind of connectivity. maybe you're one of those musicians who isn't going to blow up on YouTube like Justin Bieber or Taylor Swift or something, but you're still able to sit down at the piano and do a Facebook Live and blow some people away, change their day, communicate a message to them at just the right time that changes how they feel. You don't have to do something amazing to be happy. But here are some questions. How do you define amazing? Are we talking everyday amazing? 1,000 true fans amazing and you can make some money from it on the side? Are you internet famous or mainstream media famous? Do you have to be any of these things? Can you go back to making a pretty cake just for your sister's wedding? Can you just decorate cookies and build gingerbread houses with your kids at the holidays? How about you sing to your beloved when there's no one else around to hear it? What if you write an amazing toast for a friend's retirement party? What if what you can jot down in a blank card rivals anything a greeting card company author can compose? What if a birthday card from you makes a person choke up and weep? That's still kind of amazing. So I think the decision, the answer to these questions, is a matter of scale. What kind of scale do you require to be happy? Because you do have to express your creativity, share your gifts, practice your talent. You must. For your own health and well-being and for the joy of others, it's kind of a duty, really. And it's part of a whole lifestyle now, like eating well and exercising and getting good sleep and having friends. You must. You don't have to do something amazing to be happy. But what scale do you really require? Most people I know would love it to be the scale of their job and income. But be careful with that. Turning a passion into a job can change the passion. My friend Trisha went to school to be a pastry chef. Her desserts are amazing. But when she went and got an admin job at a university, she told me it was because working in restaurants was horrible for her, and it sucked all the joy out of why she baked in the first place. So she went and got an office job, and she's happier having her baking be her passion and not her job. Being married, raising kids, having friends and family, being a part of a community, even if it's a tiny band of misfit rebels, having a furry companion animal waiting for you to come home because you are the center of their universe, traveling, watching a great show on TV with your significant other, binging Netflix alone on an iPad, or gloriously alone with a book and a cup of tea. You may borrow from any of the above or supply your own happy things. Are these things amazing? I think they meet the definition of amazing. But when we talk about doing something amazing with our lives, meaning something large scale, a legacy that will outlive us, do you really need that? When you look into your heart, when you get really honest with yourself, you may find that you don't. I don't know what will make you happy. You may not know yet either. You might stumble upon it. Just make sure you take a moment to acknowledge it when you finally realize you're sitting smack in the middle of it. Don't miss it, the happiness, because you're focused on the amazing. I'm speaking to you now as someone who does have to do something a little bit amazing. If you think creating and producing this show is amazing, if writing and publishing books is amazing, I think both those things are a little bit amazing. I consider all this and I found that I'm a happy mid-lister. That's my scale. I don't need to be Oprah or James Lipton. I like this smaller scale. But a little bit amazing is way, way more happy for me than not doing it could ever be. That's me. You may scale up or down from that. I was struck by the line in the movie, And I spent a lot of this year considering what I could redefine and possibly let go of. I honestly believe you might actually be happier if you can let all that amazing go. I think a great exercise to do here would be to write a letter to yourself. Write a journal entry, a morning page. Consider these questions. Do I have to do something amazing to be happy? And what would happy be for me? What would it look like without that pressure? Thanks again for listening to the Shift Your Spirits podcast. For show notes, links, and all the past episodes, please visit shiftyourspirits.com. You can subscribe in iTunes or Stitcher or whatever app you use to access podcasts. The show will soon be available on Spotify if you use that platform. If you'd like to get an intuitive reading with me or download a free ebook and meditation to help you connect with your guides, please go to sladeroberson.com. And if you're interested in my professional intuitive training program, you can start the course for free by downloading the attunement at automaticintuition.com. Before I go, I promise to leave you a message in answer to a question or concern you may have. So take a moment to think about that, hold it in your mind, or speak it out loud. I'll pause for just a few seconds right now. Relax. Chill the hell out. There's no need to push yourself to be amazing today. If you can't or don't want to, you don't have to decide anything today. Take as much time as you can to meditate on the future you want without having to make it happen. Daydreams are good. They're the first blush of that future that you want. But in the present, rest. Wherever, however you can, make this day, this week, yours for relaxation and contemplation. And I'll talk to you later.